7. A Clockwork Mind. In the central Pacific, on the island of Atticus, Miss Hackandottir entered the main doors of the Crystal Palace, walking briskly past the saluting guards. She strode into the copper-plated elevator and barked, "Observation deck!" at the soldier operating the controls. The elevator rose in swift silence. Despite her dark mood, the interior of the palace, viewed through the glass doors, was impressive. Her eyes were drawn beyond the 28-foot fountain to the 100-foot brass clock that towered over the inner plaza. Its face was a clock within a triangle, the symbol of the Clockwork Guild. In earlier days it had bothered her that he'd chosen to replicate the British Crystal Palace in Sydenham Hill. The British had built it for the Great Exhibition, and had raved about its majesty for over 20 years now. She gladly would have crashed an airship into it, just to see them all moan and gnash their teeth. But as this palace was brought piece by piece to the island, and raised to the heavens, it grew into a building that made the British original look like an oversized greenhouse. It was beautiful, yes, but more important, it was 100 times more practical than England's flimsy structure. First off, it was nearly impregnable, made not of glass, but of a quartz as impenetrable as any stone. Should there be a siege, its own airship dock meant it could be resupplied for months. The soldier slid open the elevator door, and Miss Hackandottir marched onto the observation deck, a room with translucent white quartz walls that glowed with sunlight. Round observation windows faced all 4 directions across the Pacific. The roof was retracted, and the sea breeze played with her red hair and gently wafted the 6-foot feathered wings hanging from the iron rafters. They were symbolic of some Greek story or other, but since it was an imaginary tale, it wasn't important for her to recall it. The guildmaster stood in the center of the room, surrounded by 12 operators sitting at their quadruplex telegraph machines and feeding him strips of paper. He was not a tall man, but he was wiry and strong. He wore a grey military uniform without any insignia, and simple, gold-rimmed glasses. He could easily have been mistaken for a library custodian. She knew much better. He was the greatest tactician in the world. He pushed up his glasses and continued to read. This was how he kept his eyes on the world. The world. From here he gave orders to agents in all 4 corners of the earth, purchased metals or armaments, bought and sold stocks, all without a moment's hesitation. He'd formed a perfect plan in his head, and each command spoken, each message sent, brought the plan that much closer to fruition. Miss Hackandottir didn't know exactly what the plan was, but she suspected it was larger than bringing the pompous British Empire to its knees. She sometimes wondered if it was his intent to control every single government in the world. A foolish thought, for who could exert such power? Even Alexander the Great failed to accomplish it. Though he was small and lean, she feared him, for his mind could outpace hers 100 times over. And though his face was pleasant, behind those glasses his eyes were ice. Rarely did he express anything resembling an emotion. Many years before, when she'd been a captain of a Chinese pirate ship, she'd first been summoned to his Hong Kong lair. It had stunned her to discover that this nondescript white man was at the heart of a massive criminal organization that ran half of China and nearly all of the opium trade. Even then, he had an aura of power. She knew nothing of his earlier life. He could be Danish or French or Russian, even British. He had no accent, and she lost count of how many languages he spoke. She waited. It was best not to interrupt him during his work. He wrote a final missive and spoke to a telegrapher in German. Then the guildmaster turned to her. "Ah, Ingrid." His tone was flat. His eyes, such a consistent dark brown that they seemed almost black, examined her. "You've been so helpful over the years." She tensed up. "Am I about to be retired?" He let out a dry chuckle. "No. I only experienced a moment of sentimentality. I apologize. I have also been disappointed by your mistakes. The sinking of the Wyvern under your command is a fine example. The loss of that ship had nearly broken her heart. The guildmaster had even allowed her to name it so that it truly belonged to her, though he'd expressed some regret that she'd chosen a name that wasn't from the Greek pantheon. How she'd loved those iron decks and perfect guns. But now it languished at the bottom of the Atlantic. All due to Modo. I should have done better. Ah, that is true. Though my design for the wyvern was tempered by my hubris. I should have closed the interior compartments, so that a blow to the hull would not have allowed all the lower chambers to fill. Had he just admitted a mistake? She almost fell over. But don't forget, Ingrid, you lost our henchman Fur in the Thames, and allowed our mechanical giant to be captured by the British, and you failed to retrieve the Godface in the jungle. A disturbing pattern of losses. She squeezed her metal hand into a fist. Am I here to be chastised? No. I seek only to remind you that you are not perfect. I am aware of that. He nodded. Do you have any thoughts about the disappearance of Mr. Socrates? He is hiding in one of his pampering homes. Do you want me to hunt him down? The mere thought of it made her heartbeat quicken, her bloodlust rise. How she would love to corner Alan, or Mr. Socrates, as he fancied himself, and skewer him right through the heart with her sabre. After all, he was the one who'd cut off her hand. She should perhaps thank him for that, since the metal hand was her greatest gift. But she still remembered the pain of the blow during the sword fight. He would pay for that. You're dreaming of revenge, aren't you? The guildmaster said. His eyes were measuring her again. Don't deny it. You get a crinkle between your eyebrows when you dream of such things. I've toyed with the idea of flushing him out, along with the rest of the association. We shall remove the members of the association from the board one by one. But at this point, I don't want to take any resources away from Project Hades and the Myrmidons. She'd heard him mention this project several times, and she knew the bodies that were arriving daily at the island were part of it. She also now knew that Myrmidon meant warrior. She'd asked Dr. Hyde for the definition. She was growing tired of having to know every single Greek myth. If only she understood the grand plan behind it all. What is it you want me to do? She asked. There have been interesting developments in France. Our search for more, how shall I put it, flesh, is progressing at a satisfactory rate. And why do you mention this? He paused, deep in thought. She knew better than to ask another question at this point. I was considering sending you there, he said a second later. But I have reconsidered. Lyme is progressing nicely, and you and your airship skills are needed here. Our assembly of the Myrmidons is of the utmost importance. You want me to transport bodies? Yes. An airship is faster than waiting for boats. I have ordered you a larger airship, though construction will not be finished for 3 months. We'll make do with our older airships. Soon we'll have more than enough material. Is this a demotion? She asked, then quickly added, Sir? He smiled. No. You enjoy being in the air, and your efforts will help the Hades project come to, well, to life. Another dry chuckle. If these are your orders, then I will follow them. But there is little challenge to transporting the dead. Would you prefer I bring them back alive? That would be simple enough. I would only need a dozen or so guild soldiers. And irons. Ah, Ingrid. That is an intriguing idea. But far too time-consuming. And I need the extra soldiers here. You may depart southwest now. There are materials in New Zealand. I shall contact you along the route if your orders change. Yes, sir. She left him and made her way to the airship tower near the dock. The Gorgon could make the journey to New Zealand in 4 days. She commanded her pilot to fire up the engines and her crew to load supplies. The sooner she was in the air, the better she would feel.